Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. This is your host, Brett Williams. This is Classical Guitar Insider. And today I'm thankful for our guest, Beverly Mayer. Beverly Mayer has reached legendary status as a guitar dealer here in New York. She's been doing it for, you know, half a century. And one of the first people you hear about when you move to the big city is this person and her guitar salon, which she has had on 45 Grove Street the whole time. It's her apartment. It's a nice, beautiful big space. And if you know 45 Grove Street, you can kind of, if you know enough, you know it's a block south of the Christopher Street one stop. The Village Vanguard is there. It's just real classic New York. So, you know, when she suggested that we do the interview at her place, or she would have come to Brooklyn, but she sort of sounded like she'd rather have it there. I had no problem with it. It was great. I've always meant to visit the shop. There's old instruments there. There's a vihuela. There's a Theorbo. There's an old bandoneon. There's all sorts of cool stuff everywhere. Not to mention her incredible collection of guitars. And we were really kindred spirits. And she was very open and fun. And it was one of my favorite interviews that I've ever done. She's also one of the first female guitar dealers in the United States. And it was special. I'm really glad. It seems like every time the holidays roll around, I interview somebody I really, really, really like. I've gotten a lot of requests to interview her. People have wanted to hear from her. She's got a lot to say, and we had a good time. I'm trying to fit these into 45-minute episodes now, or at least for the interview portion. And, you know, I kind of have to cram a lot of things. It is hard to sort of get through everything and make everybody feel like they've said everything they need to say. But I think we did a good job. It's always a collaboration between me and who I'm interviewing. And the show is sponsored by SavageClassical.com, another guitar dealer. He's there in Long Island, and he has an incredible collections of guitars as well. So you can go to Savage Classical. It's SAVAGEClassical.com, and Richard Sage will show you some of the best guitars out here in this area. And I don't think they're really in direct competition. I think Beverly is sort of doing her own thing. She's got her own touch to it. And, you know, definitely, I do. Of course, I want you to go to Savage. Savage has sponsored me for 5 or 6 years, but I think you should go to both. I think if you're in New York and you're a classical guitarist, you need to make the pilgrimage to Guitar Salon. And it's by appointment only. You know, it is her apartment. So make sure that you give her a call. That's Guitar Salon. You can look it up. We say the number during the interview. It's an old 212 number. But I had to run. I probably could have talked to her for a couple more hours, but I had to go teach at 3:30 in the Upper West Side, so I had to run. The show is also sponsored by, you know, RosettaPodcastTrial.com/insider. You can go there and you can get a membership for as low as $7.50 a month. And then you can learn the language you've always wanted to learn. And you can, I guess the only better way to do it is to go to the country that speaks the language you want to learn. But if you can't do that, like I sure as shit can't, if you can't do that, you can sit here and you can do it in an entertaining and engaging way. And hopefully you can become fluent. Now, I don't know if you're fluent or not. When someone says they're fluent in a language, I have no real way of knowing it. I don't speak any other languages. For all I know, you could be full of shit. Tell me you're fluent in Spanish. All I hear is noises coming out of your mouth. I don't know. Oh, that's stupid. That is a stupid thing to think. But it's Thanksgiving, and I'm going to spend it here. I'm going to spend it in the neighborhood with new friends. My old friends, Matt, Nico, Mike, they're all out of town. So luckily, I've amassed a new group of local friends, and I get real excited about new friends because we get to talk about new things. And you know, I can say old stories, and it's like the first time they've ever heard them, and they're just so excited to see me, and we all have so much to talk about. And yeah, I got invited upstate New York with my brother, and I decided not to go because I didn't want to do the traveling. I used to travel with Giacomo, and when I was a soloist a little bit, but I finally got the idea that I can take trains to a lot of these places and have them pick me up. So when I was a soloist, that's what I did. But when I was in the duo, just getting started, we drove everywhere, and it drove me crazy trying to get back into the city on a weekend. And on a holiday weekend, it's just a mess. You spend most of the time in the car. I didn't want to do it. And I felt really bad because they had a guest list printed out and I was on it. And the whole reason was is that I made a speech at my brother's wedding that went real well. And I made a joke about how I was tired of Friendsgivings that were just all, you know, smoke and watching YouTube. And I wanted a real Thanksgiving. So they tried to get me a real family Thanksgiving. Molly's family did. And I shot them down. Because I just don't want to go. I don't want to go all the way up. I'll go up there when we can get back into the city in a reasonable amount of time. But it's going to be 5 or 6 hours, you know it, coming back over the George Washington Bridge or whatever they're taking. I don't want to deal with it. I don't want to deal with it. So I'm staying, and I'm like walking down the street with my carrots and my asparagus. That's where I come from. Stockton is the asparagus capital of the world. Look it up. It's true. We're also, we're not sponsored by this, but I want to take a second to talk about Frank Wallace and Geary Music. They're having a 50% off sale. All right, Frank's going through some stuff. I want us to support him as a community. And right now you can get his incredible compositions in PDF or hard copy form. And you can get the recordings by him and his wife, Nancy. My love goes out to them. He's an incredible composer, and I had the luxury of being able to sit in his son's apartment in Little Italy about 5 or 6 years ago, and just the two of us, and he was playing for me on a Connor guitar, and it was just a magical moment. I love those guys. I love the non-academic artists in our field. I am one of them, you know. It doesn't mean I'm not academic on the inside. It doesn't mean I continue to have a curious mind. It just means that I haven't been hired by a college in Tennessee, packed my family up, and made them miserable by living there. I prefer to live in here with my friends and in be able to make new friends if I want them. So I'm here, and that's not an offense to everybody in Tennessee. Tennessee's great. it is. I like Nashville. But anyway, so what was I talking about? What was the point of all this? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, Frank. Okay. So you can go there now. You can get 50% off his music. You can support a real composer, a real artist. That's Frank Wallace, guitarist and composer, GearyMusic.com. So let's all get over there. And also, I want you to support the show. There's no reason not to support the show right now. I think you can get a tax write-off. I'm not a 401, whatever it is. What is it? What's the tax status for nonprofit? I don't know if I'm nonprofit. I don't know if it's worth it to me. I'm sure that it is. If one of you guys wants to go and figure this all out for me, that'd be a big help. I'd be forever in your debt. I know, like, you know, Simon's on top of all that stuff, and he's working it out. It's hard enough for me just to sit here and come up with this stuff to talk about. But let's support the show, all right? It's a write-off. Just write it off. Tell them I said to you that it was a write-off. And then if I got to go to jail for a couple of weeks, I can do it. I think I can survive. I don't think anybody's going to want to sleep with me too bad. I think I can talk my way out of it. I can talk my way into sleeping with somebody just as easily as I can talk my way out. I don't know. Actually, it hasn't been that easy. But what I'm trying to say is, I'm trying to stay focused, is that I think that I am willing to go to prison to get you to donate a little more. We tried the membership thing, folks, and it was great, but the big donations aren't coming in as much as they used to. You got to go to brettwilliamsmusic.com, and you can donate as much or as little as you want. You can become a member for $5 a month. It's just not as lucrative. It's just not happening. I think that what happened is a lot of people that would do larger donations have now become members, and that's great, and I 100% appreciate the members, but I definitely, it's not designed to sort of create the illusion that now everything's okay. And I don't need those big donations anymore. I generally get a couple of big donations at the end of the year, and it makes a huge difference. So right now is a big time for it, okay? I do remain a 41-year-old single male with a roommate. So please donate to the show. I love you guys. I'm thankful to be here. I'm thankful for my family and for my new sister-in-law, Molly, and for my old sister-in-law, Melissa, and for my nephews and nieces, for my goddaughter, Ramona, and Mickey, who are going up to Connecticut and leaving Big Diaper Brett all by himself. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. This is my time with the immortal Beverly Mare. Okay, so Beverly, and I'm pronouncing correct, Mare, right?
Yes.
Do you know Manny Mare?
No.
Do you know who I'm talking about, the owner of McSorley's?
No.
Is it Irish? Is it an Irish?
No.
Well,
it's a long story. It's really not my name.
It's not your name?
No, it's a long family story. My father's, the real family name is M-E-H-R, Mare, which is even not the real family name since they came from Russia. So I don't even know what the name is, but somehow I got this name, M-A-H-E-R.
Yeah.
And my brother and I have the same, and the rest of the family have M-E-H-R. So whatever.
M-E-H-R.
Which is Mare, which is, I think, German.
Like for horse or something? Maybe.
No, M-E-H-R. I don't know.
It's just some German.
It's a name that, you know, came through Ellis Island. They just threw a name at somebody and then became that.
And that's, your family is from New York originally? Like, not originally.
My parents are from New Jersey.
Oh, from New Jersey.
Yeah, everybody's from New Jersey.
It seems...
I mean, it's true. But, you know, I have people here from all over the world. And I said, where are you from originally? New Jersey. I almost wanted to write a book called Everybody's from New Jersey. I mean, I can't believe how many people.
It's like the Fertile Crescent of the Eastern Seaboard.
Yeah.
Yeah. New Jersey.
Right. But then they all leave, of course. Most people who've been in New Jersey leave.
That's true.
When I was 17, I told my mother I'm leaving. She said, if you go, you don't ever come back. And I said, I wouldn't want to come back. That's why I'm leaving. I'm going to New York.
She said that? And you lived right across the river or where?
Don't come. She didn't want me to leave.
And what city?
It was in Paterson, New Jersey.
That's right there.
Well,
what's
yes.
she complaining about?
Well, because she wanted me to stay there and my father too. But then they moved to California, so I had to go to visit them.
Yeah. Oh, they moved to California. That's where I'm from. I'm from Stockton.
Oh.
Or did you? So you had to go. Where did they end up moving to California?
They were in Beverly, Thousand Oaks, and they were in... Oh. L.A. and Ventura. They moved around a lot in California.
What did they do? What did they do? Were they in the film industry?
No, not at all. They were in no industry.
Just wanted to live in California.
Yeah.
Had enough.
Yeah.
So when you...
Well, my brother was there with baby and wife, so that was part of why they moved there.
Oh, okay. Your brother moved there?
Yeah.
Was he in the film industry?
No, he was in the service.
Oh, okay.
And so when he moved to California with his wife and child, they wanted to join. They wanted to be with him. And I guess they were tired of New Jersey.
Yeah, sure. You know? Yeah, you get tired of New Jersey.
I think so.
That's what they say.
New York is one place you don't get tired of.
That's how I feel. And see, I don't get tired of it. People are always talking about, you know, you and I were talking about, you know, families and stuff like that. They're always talking about having to move out of the city to raise the family. I'm like, why? So you can be around a bunch of Republicans? Like, what's the deal? Why would you want to do that? Why would you want to? This is the place where your kid's going to get the most culture and the most.
It's true,
but you know, diversity. You know,
but then you have a car and you can park places. You can take the kids places.
Soccer.
Yeah, all those things.
And all those things.
There's grass. Kids want to roll in the grass a little bit. They want to smoke grass, whichever.
That's right. whichever one comes first.
Yeah.
Hopefully, it's rolling in the grass. Yeah. But as far as what brought, so you like you broke the rules. You came out to New York. How old were you?
17 or 18.
Your mom's kind of right.
Yeah.
Now, looking back on her, you're thinking what a nightmare for a mother.
I think that was the age when you leave home. Either leave or you stay for good.
17 or 18.
Yeah. And most of my friends moved out. Everybody, you know. And that was the thing to do then. You move out and you go to New York. And then you go to California, become a hippie, as I did. And hung out on the beach with my friends at Big Sur and... funny thing, a friend just called me 2 years ago. I hadn't seen her for 40 years. We used to hang out together in Big Sur. Everybody had a van. We'd go to the beach, and her friends who lived in Big Sur and had a house. But I hung out there a lot when I wasn't in New York. And she called me after 40 years and said, you're the only person of all the people, we had tons of people, the only one I know who still has the same phone number. Because I have this great apartment, and I didn't move, but everybody moves around a lot in New York or California. But I stayed here, I've been here for a long time.
You got the number, the 212 number.
Right.
What's that number? You mind telling them so they can call?
212-675-3236.
That's right. And that kind of gets us to the point. You know, I definitely want to go back. We're going to talk more about Big Sur and what was going on, what kind of shenanigans you were up to in Northern California at that time. Place of my birth. But before we do that, I should, you know, let people know. They're going to know anyway because there's an intro to this. But you're a guitar dealer and you're...
Not yet.
Not yet?
No.
What are you talking about?
Just playing then. I was just playing the guitar then.
Back then you were just playing.
Yeah, it was way back.
Right. But right now we're in your apartment.
Right.
And right now you are a guitar dealer.
Yes.
And you are probably the longest surviving guitar dealer in New York that I can think of.
And woman.
And you're a woman.
Right.
And you're a woman.
Right.
So what do we got? We got Luthier was here. They're not here anymore.
No. Well, there are a couple of guys who have classical and flamenco guitars. I mean, classical and steel strings.
Yeah, they kind of pedal them, though.
Steel strings,
they kind of go from studio to studio. What they do is they go into, you know, the Wednesday performance classes, and then they try to, you know, get the students to buy them. But you have this studio that you can go into. It's 45 Grove Street.
It's 1C.
This gorgeous...
By appointment.
By appointment only. Don't just show up.
No, because I live here, and once I was in the shower, and the doorbell rang, and I had to go into the bathroom, and I said, hello, and this woman said, I want to see some guitar. I said, you have to call me. I said, or at least let me get dressed and come back.
Yeah.
So she finally did. She went. She turned out to be a countess. That's why she just felt she could come right in without an appointment.
Just she had Jeeves just, you know, drop her off at the corner.
Yeah, really.
More, yeah, exactly.
But anyway, I did get dressed. She did come back. Mm-hmm. It was a very funny story. She came back, and she took off her coat. It was like ermine inside.
Right.
Some kind of really exotic fur. And she
when
went,
was this?
Oh, God.
A long time ago. 20
yeah,
years ago.
20 years at least. Yeah. And so she said she wanted to see a particular guitar that I had. It was a flamenco guitar with pegs. So, you know, when you have a guitar with pegs, you have to turn and push in.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I mean, you don't just turn. They're not they're wooden pegs. They have to be turned like a violin. Turn and push.
Are you talking about? Oh, so they kind of face the back of the guitar.
Or on the sides, yes.
Right.
So.
Oh, I see. I'm trying to think. Oh, there's one right there.
Yeah.
Okay. What is that? What kind of instrument is that?
Oh, that's just a little Portuguese guitar. 1800s.
Yeah, exactly. And that's got the wooden pegs. So you take the wooden pegs and then you push it in to get it to stay.
Yeah, it's hard to get it to stay in tune. You turn it, push it in. Now they have replacements for flamenco guitars with that are just machines. They're much easier. You attach them and they turn just like a regular machine tuner. But these were pegs. Anyway, she looked at the guitar and she said, okay, I'll buy it. So I said, okay. She wrote out a check. She handed me the check, and I look at the check, and it says, Countess de Mouchy. Literally, Countess de Mouchy.
Which, what does that mean?
Well, that was her
anything.
Name. De
Countess.
Mouchy. Yes, Countess de Mouchy was her name. So she took the guitar, gave me the check, and I happened to be meeting someone later at the museum, the Met. I went to the Met, and I kept getting phone calls on my machine. She had called in, and I saw all these phone calls from her. The problem was that she never... She didn't know how to tune the guitar. She said, I can't make it go into tune. So I said, you have to turn and push, turn and push. She didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't know.
Maybe she had her, you know, her person that worked for her do it for her originally.
Yeah.
But, or maybe she played guitars that had regular tuners, machine tuners. But she didn't know what to do. I had to instruct her over the phone to turn and push.
So French countess.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable. That harkens back to the days of the parlor and... Female guitars. It was a female's instrument.
Right.
In the 1800s.
But this was in the 20th century, and she was buying this really nice guitar, which was, I think, at the time maybe $5,000, which was now it's probably $15 or $20.
Right. I think it's further roof.
But anyway, she came and bought it so quickly. The coat, the fur coat, the name. I thought, wow, what a funny thing.
What
that
a
was.
Whirlwind of
really,
excess.
Yes.
And maybe I missed something, but she then took it to the Met?
No, I went to the Met.
You went to the
Met. I went
to
meet someone, but I called into my machine, and I heard all these messages in distress from her. Beverly, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to tune it. I don't know how to tune it.
I can't tune my, inflation $15,000 guitar.
Right, so.
We were struck with extreme inflation in the guitar market.
Yeah, right.
I mean, literally, when I started out playing guitars, the maximum that you could spend... You know, unless you bought like something insane, was like 7,000. That was so seven to ten, and now it's like we're starting at 12.
Well, everybody has guitars 7 to 10,000.
Right.
That's why I'd like to have mostly vintage guitars.
Okay.
That are much, much higher in price because there's only one. So if someone, if I have a Boucher or a Hauser, someone said comes in to see that guitar, it's a yes or no. If someone comes to see a guitar under 10,000, well, I have a bunch of them. I'm going to show you 6, 7, 8, and you're going to be confused. And then you go somewhere else and try 10 of theirs, and somewhere else, and finally you find maybe one that's, okay, I like this one. Maybe not as much as enough, but there are too many choices. That's why it's much
How
easier.
How interesting.
Much yeah. easier to buy, to sell a guitar that's 20, 50, 150,000, because it's a one-time person.
Right.
They come and they look at it, and they say yes or no.
They say yes or no.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
They'll say, like, I know the maker, but this isn't the one I'm looking
right.
for. My friend had one that sounded yeah. better, or this
right.
and that.
Right.
That's a really good point, because that's kind of what happened to me. You and I talked on the phone, and I've been stifled by the amount of choices that I have. Mm-hmm. And so I never ended up buying a guitar yeah. after my junior recital. And, you know, everybody else, all my other buddies all have, you know, they've
yeah.
taken out mortgages or done whatever they
right.
needed
yeah.
to do. But that's a really interesting point, is to kind of know, grow into what you into what you want, and then approach the dealer.
Right.
Would you say that's kind of the way to do it? Otherwise, you end up wasting a lot of people's time.
Well, what a lot of people do, you know, they hear a guitar someone else is playing, and they want to play that guitar.
Right.
Thinking that they're going to sound the way that person did, and of course they don't. But they buy, or they buy a guitar.
Right.
They want a guitar their teacher has.
Mm-hmm.
So the teacher plays a guitar by X. And I have one by X. They'll come and most likely buy it because the teacher has it, and they're influenced by that.
Yeah.
So, and people are very influenced by names. I am also. And I once had a guitar. I looked at the name, and it was something very valuable. And I looked, when I was playing many years ago, and I said, "Wow, this must be great." And I played, and I thought, you know, I don't like it. It must be me. Well, the truth is, a lot of people didn't like it, and some people loved it. And
right.
that's how it is with guitars. You know, I could have the greatest guitar that I think is great, someone else thinks is great, and someone else thinks is eh.
Yeah, and see, that's another thing, too, because I returned a guitar. The one that I did buy was by a young German maker. I don't remember his name. It was oddly shaped. Kind of had one of those, you know, the different sound ports in the middle of the face. I don't know, just very, very strange. But I loved the way it sounded. It had sort of this boxy sort of sound, this sort of lute, sprucey sort of sound.
Mm-hmm.
And I played it for Giacomo, who was my best friend at the time, and he thought it was super cool, and it kind of spoke to my strengths. And I played it for my friend Paul, who I have now known to be one of the most pessimistic, just grouchiest little shits I've ever met in my whole life. And he completely turned me off to the guitar. And so now I'm like... So I returned the guitar, and now I'm like looking back at it, and I'm like, that could have been my guitar, but I listened to too many opinions instead of just listening to my own, you know,
yeah.
heart.
It's your sound,
right?
But of course, what you hear behind the guitar is different than what they hear out there.
Right.
So if they like it, you may not, and vice versa.
Yeah.
And sometimes a teacher comes with a student, and the teacher likes a particular and tries to push that guitar because they like the sound of it and they like the name. And this, I once had someone, the teacher
kept
saying...
You can see the student, just not...
Yeah, and the student kept saying, I like this one better. And the teacher said, play that one again. And I said, you know, let him choose his own.
Right.
And the kid was really influenced by what the teacher was almost going to buy and finally decided, yes, he'd buy the guitar he wanted, not what the teacher wanted. So it's best if they come by themselves or with their mother who, or father who don't know anything.
Exactly. No, and that's true, because that's when you fall in love with your guitar.
Yeah.
Just have it to yourself.
Right, and you should fall. And you can't fall in love with it immediately. I mean...
And you're not going to fall in love with it because someone else tells you to.
And we know what that kind of love is. You fall in love, and then it's really lust, and then it's over in a minute. Then there's somebody else. So that's why there's so many people and so many guitars.
That's right. That's why there's so many...
Yeah, so you have to really come and... feel that you love it. It feels good. It sounds good. You know, I've had guitars where someone says, I love the guitar. I love the sound, but it's just, I don't like the feel of it.
Yeah.
Or I like the feel and I don't like the whatever, the first string or the third string or whatever. So there are a lot of variables in buying. It's like, I guess, getting married, which I've never
done.
It is,
which you've never done. I've never done.
Because there are too many guitars.
Well.
And too many people.
Yeah, that's kind of what happens.
That's what it is. I mean, how could you be with one guitar all your life?
I don't know.
Or one person. It's all the same. One person, one guitar. Guitars are people.
Well, you know, the thing is that when I look at the people who've done that, just down the board, they're upset with each other.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody who's, I've never seen a truly 100% happy couple that's been together for more than 10 years in my entire life. That's no right. offense, everybody, but you know it's true.
Yes, it's true. It is true.
So, you know, I'm not saying that. I would love to meet somebody and do all that stuff. But, yeah, it's just not. The thing is that is what I'm finding, though, is I am finding that as now I'm 41 and now I'm single and now I'm starting to go, look at all these. There's too many choices. Same things happened to me with the guitar. Mm-hmm. I'm getting stifled.
Yeah.
It is about just settling, though, isn't it? To some degree, well, with the guitar,
I
need a guitar.
Yeah, you could settle if that's what you want to do.
Yeah,
but I think you could settle, and then you could redo. You can sell it to someone else, or you could get rid of the person and bring another person in.
Can't do that with a wife. Mm. Not these days.
No.
Not with all this new.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah, which is. Not that we would want to do that.
No, but there are open marriages.
There are.
And open guitars. I mean, we, you know.
Yeah, we should have.
People should switch guitars, too.
I think 100%.
Right.
You know what?
They switch partners. Why not switch guitars?
Right. Well, you know, that's more the 60s. Oh, the switching of the partners.
Right, yeah.
Going back to that, you know, swapping it up and everything over there and what you were doing in California. What drove you out to California? Because from what I understood, and we'll come back to the guitars because I could talk about that all day. What I understood was that your parents moved out there for your brother, and then you moved out there. How old were you when you left New York and went to California?
About 17 or 18.
Okay, so this is a year of just...
Well, first I came here to New York.
Causing trouble.
Yeah, first I came here, got the apartment.
Okay.
And then I went to visit a friend in California who was very involved in the Big Sur Festival,
yeah.
And I got to know a lot of the folk people, you know, Joan Baez and Judy Collins and all of them. And
you knew them?
Yeah. And Christofferson. I used to meet them at the festivals, and I knew to them to say hello. I used to be friends with Judy. She used to come drop in my house. Sometimes when I was teaching, she would come by with another friend of mine and ring the bell. Everyone wants to come by and pee in my house.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when they're walking around New York, they need to go to the bathroom, so they ring my bell.
Was it here?
Yeah.
This
yeah.
is the house. Judy yeah. Collins has peed in this house.
She's peed in this house.
She's a New Yorker, though.
God, Judy, I hope you don't hear this. Yeah. Yeah.
She's not going to hear this.
If she lives uptown.
I hope. Well, if she wants, Judy, we'd love. Thank you for listening, Judy Collins. So she lives uptown.
Yeah.
And they won't let you pee anywhere up there. That's even worse.
That's true.
Here, they might let you.
Well, there's Starbucks. People always go to Starbucks, I think.
I know.
I think, as far as I know.
Those restaurants have guards at the door.
But they didn't have Starbucks in those days, so people were always ringing my bell. All my friends would always come by with somebody or by themselves. Can I use your bathroom? Can I use your bathroom?
Oh, so because you're first floor too.
Yeah,
you're right there.
Right
looking
there.
Down over it.
Yeah.
And what kind of was that? Always a restaurant across the street, or what was that?
It was a different restaurant. It's changed so much. I mean, I've been here 55.
Yeah, I mean, again, people need to Google map this. It's not show up without an appointment. Definitely
right.
make the appointment.
Right.
But you should really see where we are. It's really special.
Yeah.
It's where all the movie stars live.
Yeah. This is a very famous area. A lot of actors and writers. And this is a historic building. They're always doing tours here. Now they're pointing to me at the window and saying, and there's Beverly. And they now know me from being in the apartment.
You've got the New York Times right up there and everything we were talking about earlier. But the main the thing is when we were talking about you coming out to Brooklyn, and then it sort of dawned on me that I'd never been to the apartment, which is sort of a fabled apartment. You know, when you moved to New York as a student, which I did, and then you hear about this apartment, you know, where there's these guitars.
The guitar
and it's
salon.
In Greenwich Village.
Yeah.
The guitar salon. And it is. It does look like a salon.
Yeah.
It looks like Chopin is going to play the piano and then...
Well, look at my logo, the beautiful woman sitting on a chair.
Yeah, let me look at it. I've seen that logo. Yep, very salon. This is exactly what we were talking about.
Yeah.
This is the Dame de Beauvoir or whatever.
Right.
What was her name? Countess.
Countess de Mouchy.
De Mouchy. Yeah, the guitar salon. Classical and flamenco guitars and a lot more. We've got like I said, there's a bandoneon here. There's a couple of lutes. There's a great, what do you call it? Grand lute, Baroque lute?
That's a theorbo.
A theorbo.
That's precursor to the lute. But this is my collection, my private collection, this room. The guitars that I sell are in the back room with the humidifiers blasting all day long.
You've got a modern Lear? Or what is that? That's just, I guess that's kind
a,
of...
That's right here. It's yeah. a Lyre guitar. Lyre.
That's how you say it, Lyre.
Lyre, yeah. L-Y-R-E. And then all my guys, pictures of my people, Hausers, and Friedrich, and my man Velasquez, Manuel Velasquez, my favorite...
guitar maker.
He's our Hauser. Hauser is one of the most well-known.
That's Adam Holzman, my teacher, yeah. in Texas. Velasquez is his favorite guitar.
Really? Yeah. yeah. Very
that
wonderful.
That he owned.
This sweet, beautiful, resonant, terrific guitar. There's a video on my site where he was interviewed with me, and Virginia Luque is playing guitar, and it shows him talking about how he loves the guitar and what it means to him. It's really beautiful. You really get to see a man who loves what he's doing, and he comes through in his guitars. You know, a lot of the guitars I sell, and I don't know the people that own mm-hmm. them. I don't know the people that made them. And then I come to see them, and they're guitars. You can see that they are, you know, like rough. The guitar isn't sweet and sensitive. It has a different feeling, quality,
right.
but like the man. And this man, I don't want to speak about every guitar maker.
I'm sure you don't.
But in terms of Velasquez, he was the dearest man. When Virginia played, he loved.
I mean, I was tempted to press you. I was tempted to go, why don't you tell me about it? But then I thought, no, let her do her thing.
He used to, whenever Virginia Luque, he loved her particularly. They spoke Spanish, and he loved her playing, which I do too. I think she's one of the greats. And whenever she played, as she did for him in this recording, he would tear up. He was a very sensitive man. And you could see when he talks about his guitars, but the wood and the feeling in his face and his hand, I mean, something really special. And here he is.
That's not a big deal. That's fun.
Should I turn
That's the human. Yeah, you probably turn. Or unless you want to pick it up. You can pick it up, too.
Hello? Guitar Salon.
Yes, Beverly. If you have a second, I was calling about couple of the instruments that you have.
Well, actually, I'm being interviewed at the moment, so can I call you back?
Sure.
Okay, I will call you back. Yeah.
You know what? It might be easier if I give you a call back. When would be a good time? Because I'm going to be in and out of meetings.
I'll be finished in about an hour or so.
Oh,
yeah. Perfect. I'll give you a call.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye, thanks. Okay.
Sweet. Yeah, I'll beep out his name. But his voice will be on there. That'll be kind of cool.
Right.
Yeah. You know, so the thing is, you're talking about Velasquez. You're talking about the emotional connection that the luthiers have with their instruments, which people don't generally think, you know. I've met the ones who I've met are, you know, I guess just younger.
Yeah.
I haven't met any of the old greats.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, right now, you know, the most important people now are the Hausers. They've always been. But now there's Katrin Hauser, which is Hauser 4.
Mm-hmm.
And her guitars are sensational. Well, you know, there are also other women like Yoshia Dejong, mm-hmm. Sergei Dejong's daughter. The women are making gorgeous guitars. You know,
women are making guitars.
We're going to take over, let's face it.
I think you are. I think that's. I
mean, they're making great guitars. They're doing wonderful things in politics. We should have been there a long time ago, but pretty soon you guys are going to be.
I feel like it's going to happen. It's already happening,
yeah.
And I don't mind. I'm fine with it. I've had a good run.
Yes, well, you're that kind of guy that's okay with it, but a lot of guys aren't, and they'll have to find another place for themselves.
I think they have something to protect,
yeah.
And I think that's the thing. That's the difference.
It's, yes. just,
it's almost easy for me to go like whatever, it's fine, I don't care, but I don't have anything. There's nothing to protect there.
Yeah,
but at the same time. Yeah, it's long overdue. We've got these women makers. You're talking about Virginia Luque, who's going to be here at the end of the month. I'm going to try to interview her.
She's a guitarist.
Is this
yeah.
her latest album? Is it Goldberg Variations
yeah.
for guitar?
Yeah, which is monumental.
Absolutely, I can't believe that. Even that's pretty amazing.
Yeah. And now she's with Leo Brower. She's doing all of his recordings.
Yeah.
His pieces that are very difficult.
That's where
to
she's at right now.
Yeah.
She's in Spain
yeah.
or whatever.
In
where does he live?
Cuba.
Now?
He's in Cuba.
He's back in Cuba
yeah.
now
yeah.
because Cuba's open.
Yeah.
So he can go back.
Yeah.
Oh. I didn't even think about that.
Sure.
The implications of that on the guitar world are profound.
I know, and he's one of the greats.
Manuel Barueco.
Yeah.
Rene. Everybody. That's a big deal for us. I mean, I thought about it at the time, but then I forgot about it because I'm a white man, and we're. No, I'm just joking.
Oh, I didn't notice.
No. And we're gonna eventually become marginalized, which
is
fine.
I'm white too.
I know you are. You're next. But I think that what is really interesting about this is how you have you. This is not a store. This is your apartment, and you've kept it that way. Have you ever been in a situation where you felt like it would be advantageous for you to take over a store, or did you just always understand that, you know, walking into this building, it's one of the most beautiful and well kept, in the sense that it is, it's got all the original parts to it. So it almost, you know what it almost reminds me of? It reminds me of those big buildings up in Washington Heights. Mm-hmm. You ever been in one of those?
Yes.
It's very unlike other buildings that I've been in. I haven't been in, you know, I've either been in really rich people's houses in the village, or I've been in really poor people's houses in the village. I've never seen like a middle class home in the in Greenwich Village, which harkens back to the 60s and 70s when that was a possibility. Well, and it's just a pleasure to be here. It's unbelievable. It's like being in a museum.
Well, this place was, this building was built in 1830.
Like there are normal people living here.
Yes.
Yes.
Besides me.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Besides you.
And you know, I would not want to be in a store, because it's a whole different feeling. This way people are coming into my apartment, to my house.
Right.
And there's a different feeling when someone comes, you know, I say hello, I serve coffee or tea. I used to have a dog who would greet them.
I'm sorry to hear about your dog. You told me your dog just
recently.
One.
Yeah, I've had many dogs, but I welcome dogs. I usually have a neighbor's dog a few times a week to play with. Mm-hmm. Like I have to have that dog energy. And you can bring your dog here and try a guitar. I'll hold the dog. I don't care. I'd love it. I'd love to have that happen.
That's what you said to me. You go, "Did you have a dog?" And I was like,
"No."
And you go, "Well, you know, I love dogs."
Yeah, bring your dog. Go play the guitar, and I'll play with your dog. It'll be fine.
Exactly. But, oh, that's
kind
of fun.
But there's this different feeling, and people feel that too. They sit in here, and I go in another room. Yeah. You could sit here for hours and play a guitar. I've had people come here and play, and I go out.
Yeah.
I go out for lunch, and I come back and let them sit. They want to stay here and play the guitar for hours. And you can do that. In a store, you couldn't do that.
No.
Too many people coming and going, one person at a time. I don't want to see five people playing guitars together. So they feel comfortable, and they feel at home, and they're alone, and they can play in the room. The acoustics are good, and it's a nice...
That's another thing, is the acoustics are good. You're not just sitting there in a box. Like you are at some of the other places, like you are at all the other places, at the stores.
Yeah.
That's what they do. They put you in a tiny box makes your guitar sound horrible.
Right, and they close the door, and you're in this little room.
You're like, this is not the experience that you're going to have with this guitar.
Right.
Just playing it in a soundproofed closet.
Yeah.
It is a really special place. You went to California for the purpose of just hanging out. You're 17, you're 18 years old.
Well, I didn't go quite that young. There's a period in there where I got involved with somebody, and I was about to get married. I was engaged, and then I met somebody else.
Oh.
And so I didn't get married.
And then you came back here.
Then I went to California.
Oh, okay.
And then I met somebody else. and that was how it was. And I started to travel after California.
Were you breaking hearts? You were like, just did these guys wanted you to stay then?
Well, mostly I broke hearts. I got broken. Yeah. I had my heart broken a few times too. But I wanted to travel also, so I traveled around the world. I went with a friend. We went on a freighter, and we landed in Morocco, and we just hitchhiked all over the world. We'd look at a map and we'd say, "Where do you want to go tomorrow?" "Oh, I don't know. Let's go to Egypt." "Okay," or "Let's go wherever we want to go." We just would go. We just hop on a train or.
Right.
And it's something you can do when you're young. You can't do that when you're older. Because first of all, you know, you don't get a hot shower every day.
No.
And you don't get the kind of food you want to eat. So, but it was the most incredible experience of my life. I mean, meeting people from all over the world. I saw the pyramids. I was in every country you can imagine. And it was, two people lived on $5 a day. You can't do that now.
No.
So, and I met wonderful people. And everybody said, "Come home." You know, we hitchhiked. Whoever we met on a train, on a bus, we went home with them, and it was safe.
It was safe in Egypt.
And even in Egypt, In fact, I was on a bus, and we started to talk to this man with his son, and he said, "Come home with me." So we said, "Okay, we get home."
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, so we're walking along, and suddenly we're walking on sand.
Your poor mother.
Right, and my God, if she only knew. And my friend turns to me and she says, "Nobody knows where we are."
She just wanted you to stay in Patterson.
I know.
Now you're hitchhiking in Egypt.
I'm in Cairo, yeah.
After three failed attempts at monogamy.
Right. So anyway, it was, and we went to his home and there were the pyramids right out his window. So, you know, you can't do that now. I barely travel anymore because, first of all, you know what it's like at the airports and the people and the... all of that. So
well, it's very impersonal.
Very.
You know.
And when you're young, your experiences are different. People are different. And you, even if you don't speak the language, you communicate. That's what's so wonderful. That's what I love about traveling. You know, talking to people with one word you know, and you can tell your whole life story.
Exactly. Yeah. That's right. That is exactly what it's like traveling. Yeah. Using gesticulation and, you know, emotion.
Right. Pointing to something.
Yeah. A lot of eyes, a lot of this.
Yeah.
But as far as, is that where you went? You went to Egypt mostly?
No, I went all over the Middle East and all over Europe.
All over the Middle East.
Yeah, Egypt, Israel, Jordan, yeah.
And that was in the 60s?
60s.
Okay, so it was before the whole hostage crisis and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So it was kind of, nothing had quite blown up yet. We hadn't given them weapons yet. Reagan gave them the weapons.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I think Sadat was the president at the time.
Of Egypt?
Yeah, I think it was Sadat.
Yeah.
So.
How?
I love the Middle East. I love the people.
Yeah.
It was the most beautiful country. There's so many places. Turkey, I love Turkey. I've been there many times. I couldn't go there now.
Yeah, isn't that with the, how do you say his name?
The guy,
Uryan. It's Uryan or something. Yeah. It's spelled Erdogan.
Yeah, well, he is arrogant.
He is, yeah, and he completely changed the game over there.
I know.
Because when I was in college, that was where all the sort of free thinking, westernized people were, and now it's like unbelievable. This wave of nationalism that's spreading.
And it's one of the most beautiful countries, the people and the food. And I was bitten by a dog there once, but you know, it's okay.
You're bitten by a Turkish dog.
Turkish dog.
That's a book cover.
And I didn't care that the dog bit me.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't care that I was bitten. What I cared was that a dog would bite me who loves dogs.
That's true. I didn't even think about that.
That's what hurt.
Yeah. Did that give you pause now, petting dogs?
No, I still do it.
Just go for it?
But mostly in this country. I'm not traveling so much.
I always think about this girl that was a preschooler when I was a little kid. My mom was a preschool director, and she had her nose just bitten into, and she was a child model. This was in Los Angeles when I was a kid. It just completely, just a mess. The two families were going at it legally, and it was just a disaster. And so I always think about that when I'm getting close to a dog.
But they can fix the nose. I mean,
yeah, I mean, if they're they can.
This is not a dog bite. This was from being in the sun too much.
Is that what happened?
Yeah, this is called the Mohs. Is where the doctor sees something that could be cancerous and they cut it out.
Oh, jeez.
And then you have a bandage on and you look like you were bitten by a dog, but no.
No, you don't look like you were bitten by a dog.
Well, at first I did. This is now a couple of weeks. It's getting better.
It looks like you're just, you know, having some comfort under those glasses is what it looks like, a little pillow under the glasses. Well, as far as, you know, kind of coming back to New York, what drew you back here? Because you've been here since what year have you been in this apartment? Or back in New York?
Well, I've been here 55 years in this apartment. Because I'm much older than I look.
You can tell me, or you don't have to tell me.
No, I don't. I won't tell you. I usually tell people, so they say, "Oh, come on, you're kidding." But I won't do it over the air. In person, I'll tell you.
There you go.
But I guess I came.
I won't tell a soul.
I guess I came. Well, I'll let you guess and see how close you come. I came back because I think I decided that I have to do something.
Right.
And I was playing the guitar. I was studying, and I was teaching. And then I got into the business because I went into a shop and I got friendly with the guy and he asked me to teach there and then to watch the shop on Saturday and then for the week and the weekend, and it grew and grew and grew till finally he would go away for the holiday or for summer. And then I got to know all the people in the guitar world, and he was on 48th Street and then he moved to 57th. His name was Noah Wolf. He was the guitar guy, the only guy in New York. And sold guitars.
He was getting guitars from outside of the country and bringing them in.
Velasquez was a big contributor. He was making guitars for him all the time, and Noah put him on the map, and he put Noah on the map.
When did he die?
He died about 5-10 years ago. I just looked up the date now. I've forgotten it again. I think
he must have been very old.
He was well in his 90s. Yeah,
because he was making guitars in the 60s.
Yeah. Oh, his guitars were 50s and 60s.
Yeah, those were the big ones.
Yeah. Yeah.
And do you have any of those?
I don't have any of the 50s or 60s right now. They sell very quickly. Yeah. And the last one I sold, it was an 06. The guy's coming to pick it up in the next couple of days. They go very fast because they're so beautiful.
Yeah.
and they're, and you know, people paid nothing for them. They'll come by with a guitar from the 50s and say, you know, they paid maybe $1,000, $1,200, and it's worth $15,000, $20,000 now.
Yeah.
If it's in good condition. Don't quote me on that.
Don't quote her on that. It's only worth $7,000. We're only going to resell it for $15,000. We're not talking about that. But as far as you know, that, what's your favorite instrument that you've ever sold? I mean, you played. So were you?
Yeah, I used to play. Yeah, I don't play anymore. Well,
we don't have to go directly into that, but once we talk about the favorite instrument that you've ever sold, or one of the favorites, or a good story about it, I also want to come back to your playing and why, or how that, the trajectory of that, of okay. You as a player.
Okay. Which do you want to start with, me as a player?
Sure.
Well, you know, I used to play the piano, and somebody, one of my relatives said, you know, I have this guitar in the closet, maybe you want it. And he gave me the guitar, and I started to play it, and then I took lessons. And then I got very interested in the guitar and dropped the piano.
In Patterson?
In Patterson, yeah. I had a teacher and was playing folk songs. Then I came to New York, and I was still playing folk songs. And then I got into California with all the folkies, and I was, and there was a big folk scene here in the Village, of course. And then,
so when you were a big sir, you could play guitar.
Yeah.
Were you playing with them?
Not with them, but I played. I was one of
Yeah, you could know, sit in the circles.
Yeah. Yeah. And when I went travel to Europe, I took my guitar and I used to play on the trains.
Yeah.
And once I finally gave the guitar away because it was just too difficult carrying it around. But.
Yeah, go ahead. We're still recording.
So I forgot what I was saying about.
You would go to Europe and you would play guitar. When you got to New York, you were still playing.
Yeah, and then I decided to study classical guitar.
Sorry, they didn't. For some reason, the screen turned off, but it seems like everything's working fine.
Okay, so I studied classical guitar, and then I studied flamenco guitar, and I studied blues and jazz and all different styles. And now I don't play because it's I have too much other things to do.
And you study them? Did you go to college for it? Or
no, I just had teachers.
Yeah, well, there weren't too many colleges.
No, they weren't teaching guitar then.
No. Yeah, definitely.
Now everybody's teaching guitar.
Do you remember the names of some of your teachers?
Yes. I studied classical with Juan de la Mata.
Uh-huh.
And then
I've heard of him.
And Julio Prol.
Him too.
He was very popular. And flamenco I studied with, I love this man. I can't remember his name. And I studied jazz with a guy, Joel something, I can't remember him. And I studied blues with Happy Traum, who's a very popular, famous blues guy. These were all teachers who were pretty well known, and they were wonderful teachers. And, you know, I just was taking lessons all the time, just playing and playing when I wasn't traveling. That's what I did. And then I got interested in doing business.
Yeah, you got interested in doing business with the guitars?
It just sort of fell into my lap.
Well, because you were working for that store.
And then he went out of business. He retired. So I took whatever he had and started selling. And then I knew most of the guitar people by then because they all came into the shop.
Yeah.
So I...
Did you take business from Mr. Wolf?
Did I what?
Did you?
No, he gave me the business.
He gave it
to
you.
Yeah, he retired. Yeah. So I took whatever stock he had, I bought from him, and then I continued. He had been in business a long time, and he was ready to retire.
Yeah.
So he said, why don't you take over? So I took whatever it was, and this was a perfect setup. And then I...
This sort of, yeah.
I was looking through a book, and I came across a lithograph of this woman, and I thought, guitar salon, that's perfect. My only mistake was that I didn't copyright it.
Yeah, because Guitar Salon International now.
Not only him, but everybody's Guitar Salon in Japan and China and India. And
did you get into it with them? Did you at some point just say, like, hey guys, you know, I've been Guitar Salon for a while?
The interesting thing is we both started at the same time with the same name, the Guitar Salon.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and then they changed theirs.
But he's in Los Angeles,
he's
too.
In Los Angeles,
so you guys didn't even know each other.
No, but we spoke on the phone we realized that...
Oh, he changed it.
Yeah, he changed it to Guitar Salon International.
Oh, that's nice. That's a wonderful classical guitar story.
Yeah.
Rather, I mean, I don't know how much you had to pressure him. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's like the... Yeah, that's that place is like a campus now. It's like insane.
Some dealers sell guitars, and some sell used cars.
Yeah.
So I prefer to sell guitars.
So this is the way it used to be, though. It used to be more where you go to someone's house, sit down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of going to a luthier's house, like going to...
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know if you know Gary Lee or whatever.
Sure. Yeah. Any of these guys, you sit, you hang around with them and they give you lunch.
Yeah, you hang out.
Yeah.
Maybe even pop a beer or something.
Right.
Aaron Green.
Yeah.
He was selling to Velasquez. But as far as, you know, when you came to New York, you started dealing... One of the things that you brought up at the beginning of the episode was that you're a woman. And that in the 60s, in the 70s, or whatever, I mean, this guy, Mr. Wolf, what's his full name?
Noah.
Noah Wolf. He just gave this business to you. Mm-hmm. What was your relationship with him before that?
Well, you know, being a woman and being the way a lot of men were after about one or two meetings.
Like, what was your role at the Wolf guitar shop?
Trying guitars and talking to customers.
Right, sales. You know, you were a sales clerk.
Yeah. And then teaching there, too.
Right.
But then he tried, you know, what a lot of guys do, he tried to grab at me. But, you know, at that time, I said, you know, stop it. I don't want to do that. I had the same experience with some of my guitar teachers. The same thing.
Yeah.
And instead of being, you know, upset, I said, I'm not here for that. I'm here to play, and I continued to take lessons, despite that. And everything was fine.
Everything was fine. It's unbelievable what people got away with, though.
Yeah.
You know, when you hear the stories about Segovia, you know, which have been told on this program. And, there's sort of the acceptance of the way that we used to treat women. Mm-hmm. And I even remember talking about them differently 20 years ago. I'm old enough to remember some of the crap we used to just throw out there right in front of them. But, yeah, the idea that you could be a teacher and hit on a student is something so foreign to me in my generation. Yeah. You know, where if I've had very attractive students. We're in New York City. I've had attractive adult students. And something in me just clicks off and does not allow that to enter, you know, under any circumstances. Yeah. It's unbelievable that that would happen. But he sort of, you know, flirted with you. You said no. Mm-hmm. And then he was fine. He was like, that's fine.
Right.
Right.
And a lot of women I spoke to, we're talking about the teacher now.
The teacher that you were working with actually.
Well, Noah was one thing. I mean, he may have done it. I'm sure you do it with one person. I'm sure you try with others.
Yeah.
But I know for a fact that other women who studied with this teacher, this particular teacher, had the same experience. And I spoke to about four or five women that happened to come across them in my travels. And they all studied with him, and they all had the same experience. But I think a lot of people at the time, you know, you could say stop, and they would stop.
So he wouldn't?
And he did. Yes, he did.
He stopped?
Yeah.
But he would try with everybody?
He'd try, yeah.
How do you try with your students?
I know.
Because the thing that the Me Too movement has highlighted, and that's very important, is the position of power and the power dynamic.
Yeah.
That, you know, because I don't agree with this. I don't agree that if you're working with somebody, you shouldn't be able to approach them and say, hey, do you want to go out on a date? I feel like that should be acceptable if we're on the same, you know, field. If you are someone's boss, that just can't be acceptable anymore. Or at least that's the deal, is that the power position, the position of you being able to further someone's career, get them into a master class, you know, teach them better, pay more attention to them, you know, that being a potential that's going to spin off of you being able to hit on them is pretty, pretty despicable.
And usually the bosses are married anyway.
They're all married, yeah. These fucking guys are all married, exactly. Yeah. See, I'll bleep that out for you. But the thing is that what we're doing is we're...
I know the word fucking.
We won't bleep it. It'll be good. I say it all the time on the program, but I didn't want to say it in front of you because you told me that you were older.
Oh, so when you're older, you want me to make a list of list out, say all the words I know?
Well, do you remember when older people were like... Very sensitive to
but
the
I'm
swear
not older,
words.
Older.
You're not that old.
I'm
no,
not, I'm not older in that way.
No,
I still swear a lot.
Yeah,
I like to swear. It's very important to say those things.
Why? Why is it important? I agree. I agree. I agree in that.
Sometimes those are the only words.
The only words that
they really. They're the only words you can that fit. You know, when someone's a fucking jerk.
Yeah.
What else can you call him? A jerk?
Oh, he's such a. He's a goofball.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
100%. All right. Well, cheers to that. That's what I'm all about. But I'm all about swearing. But, you know, going back to that, you being a woman, and then he gave you the store. How did people react to you in the 60s or the 70s when you're selling them a guitar? These guys are coming in. Everybody, there's barely any female guitarists. And they're all coming in, and you're trying to get them to pay money, a lot of money, You're asking for these, you know, these very egotistical performers, I would imagine.
But guitarists are different.
Are we? I think we are.
Yeah, sensitive. I think for the most part, most guitarists that I have been seen here and in the store, they're different species. They are more sensitive, and this is not all of them. I'm sure a lot of them are the same, but my experience has been quite good with the guitar players. They were really nice guys. And Noah always said that to me. This is the kind of business where the people that buy guitars are nice people. And that's been my experience. I met such great people from all over the world. Some of them still come and visit when they're here. You know, so I have friends with people who bought or didn't buy.
Yeah.
And because there's and they come into my home and it's part of it. And, you know, I like people and I like to interact with them. And it's just it's a different thing. You're playing an instrument you love. You're buying it from someone who loves the instrument. So it's a really wonderful dynamic all around.
It is a wonderful dynamic. And you know what? We're at about time. If there's anything else you'd want to talk about, even though I thought that was the perfect way to end it.
I agree.
Do you agree?
Yes.
Beverly, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
And if I didn't have to teach at 3:30, I would stay and we'd make this a 4-hour episode. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That does it for my time with Beverly. Make sure that you go to brettwilliamsmusic.com and donate to the show before the end of the year. All right? Let's all get together and make it happen. I appreciate all of you. Happy Thanksgiving again. Bye.